Friday, the 5th of March 2010, Christina Keneally confuses mindless populism with leadership. The NIMBY burgers of Glebe confuse concerns about the urban environment with selfishness. And the Vivid Festival, yet another white middle-class baby boomer nostalgia wank fest. Yes, this is the 9pm Edict. Hello, I'm Still Gerry, and welcome to The Edict, a special Friday night I Love Sydney edition of The Edict. In fact, thank you for playing. Yes, I love Sydney, especially on autumn nights like this, when there's the sound of gentle rain and currawongs and the smell of moist earth. I can even almost forgive the sound of jet aircraft overhead. As you may or may not know, I live directly under the approach path to runway 16 right at Sydney Airport, and the heavy jets appear pretty much every morning at 6 a.m. sharp, and of course during the commuter hours as well. I've lived here for nearly 15 years now. The anniversary is coming up in May, as is another special date, which I'll tell you about in a couple of weeks. But there's a few things I don't like about Sydney, and I'll cover them tonight. And quite frankly, if you don't want to hear about Sydney, just turn off now. One, the endless stream of mediocre festivals, as if the only thing Sydney can offer the world is to put on a party and have tourists gawk at the place. Two, the incompetence and what many people suspect is the corruption of the state government. And three, the petty bourgeoisie and their knee-jerk reaction to any inner urban development. And I'll tackle that one first. Harold Park is an old harness racing circuit in the inner west suburb of Glebe. It's about 5 minutes walk from Blackwattle Bay on Sydney Harbour, 10 minutes walk from the funky cafes, bars and restaurants of Glebe Point Road. There's a proposal to redevelop the site, and public comment on that proposal closes this coming Monday. The plan is for 1,000-odd dwellings, a commercial development in some clapped-out old tram sheds, and so on. Needless to say, the residents in the leafy streets of terrace houses nearby are objecting. "We can stop this," says their flyer. "This is not the way to the future." They complain that Harness Racing NSW will make a huge profit from the deal, as if making a profit is of itself some kind of evil. Thing is, they haven't really offered any alternatives. Sure, they've said something about turning the grandstand into an aged care facility and just leaving the open space open. But what they haven't addressed is the need to accommodate more people in this city. Right now, Harold Park is an ugly blight on the landscape. The proposal shows how we can accommodate 1,000 homes in a place that's close to parklands, close to existing shopping, and most importantly, close to the existing light rail line to the CBD. In short, it's a really good place for a new residential development with existing public transport. So, residents of Glebe, if this spot isn't suitable for new housing, where is? Do you have any suggestions? Or do you simply want to keep your quiet streets for yourself and screw any newcomers so they can live out where there's no public transport? Well, aren't you selfish cunts? Starting on the 27th of May and running to the 21st of June, Sydney has the Vivid Festival, a festival of light, music and ideas. Now, the first one was last year, and the artistic director was Brian Eno. I'd tell you more, but the website is currently a single page saying website launching soon, and last year's information has been consigned to the memory hole. Well, this week, it was announced that Lou Reed and Laurie Anderson were curating the Vivid Live music part of the festival. Now, I'm starting to see a theme here. Artists who were avant-garde when baby boomers were toking their first weed, but who are now respectable establishment performers whose opinions are suitable for the weekend colour supplements in the broadsheet newspapers like the Sydney Morning Herald. Not so mainstream that their kids might hear them on MTV, but not so challenging that they might be in any way uncomfortable. Brian Eno, for instance. He won't be known to this demographic for his edgy rock albums Here Come the Warm Jets or Before and After Science or Taking Tiger Mountain by Strategy, but as the inventor of ambient music, something pleasant to listen to once you've got home from your mid-ranking project manager job at the Department of Human Services, poured an acceptable New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc and amped up a few pleasantly repetitive but completely non-challenging post-serialist compositions on your Bang & Olufsen. A distracting background to the discussions with your spouse about how Newington College has upped their boarding fees this year, so maybe the holiday to Nepal will have to be postponed. There's a chance they'll remember Eno as the co-composer of David Bowie's Heroes and Fashion, but that'll be more memorable as a reminder of that time when, after some rather excellent hashish, they experimented with bisexuality in a somewhat confused threesome with that girl who was in their second year political science class and who they've pined for ever since, if only they knew where she moved to after she finished her master's and did that year with some aid organisation in Cambodia. They certainly won't realise that Eno was the producer who propelled U2 from being some useless Irish pub band into the mega phenomenon they are today. No, Mr. Eno, I shall never forgive you for creating Bono, no matter how brilliant your audio production was on The Unforgettable Fire. They may remember Eno for turning some New York art wank band called Talking Heads into a phenomenon, though, and it's that connection, the urban sophistication of New York and the arty pretensions of David Byrne, that says, yes, I like Eno, so I am cultured and artistic myself, despite having never done anything creative themselves, except maybe suggest some colours for young Amanda's art class in Year 6 and gushing about how creative she is, because parents must always live through the creative energies of their offspring, which is why they gush when Eno takes the DVD he released years ago and projects it onto Sydney Opera House, and suddenly, oh goodness, how creative! And we're there sipping Sauvignon Blanc, and we too are creative. So after Eno, I guess, Lou Reed and Laurie Anderson is a logical next step. Lou Reed, whose Walk on the Wild Side is another subtle reminder of failed experiments in alternative sexuality and heroin, except you'd never actually try heroin yourself, and Laurie Anderson, whose close-cropped haircut reflects the middle-rank public service power dyke image you aspire to. If only you could dump that tedious lump of a man who sired your children, and who isn't just a musician, no, even though Language is a Virus is a fantastic pop song. No, it's not pop. Pop is disposable, and Laurie Anderson is, wait for it, a performance artist. Yeah, right. All very interesting, but what's she done since? Another tape loop? Another tour where she spends 20 minutes explaining the cultural significance of the lyrics before singing another pop song? Sorry, before taking part in another performance art piece? Ah, there'll be fireworks too. So yeah, Vivid is in Sydney. There are always fireworks. And don't forget, it's a festival of light, music, and ideas. Ah, give me a break. If you have any suggestions for who should be curating the Vivid Festival next year, do let us know in the comments. And indeed, people make comments on this program via audio, like this man.
Still Gary and Duncan Riley here. Just a comment on the whole tsunami drama issue, which was essentially this last weekend. I was on the Gold Coast at the time and woke up on the Sunday morning to actually find a tsunami warning underneath my hotel room door, and not only that, but a tsunami warning literally plastered all over the hotel. I'm two minds here. Sure, it's actually quite good now that we have the tsunami warning system. I think that in some levels we're better to be safe than sorry, but I can't help but believe. But what we're seeing here now with the tsunami warnings is no different with the bushfire warnings in Victoria. And you're not up with what's going on down here in Victoria. It's but every time it gets about over 32 or 33 degrees, the state goes mental and says that everyone's going to die. It's quite insane. So people died last year in this state, and they died even though head of the Office of Emergency Service Commissioner said nearly 24 hours after most of them died, that everyone was safe. The system has failed. So what they're basically doing now down here in Victoria is overcompensating by basically scaring the shit out of everybody, even when there's not a major risk, just in case there might be a risk, because they, in excuse language, they fucked up last year. Is the tsunami issue the same? Maybe. Should you maybe err to the safe side? Perhaps. I don't know. It's quite exciting, you know. I couldn't actually swim that last day in the Gold Coast. I had a tsunami warning under my door. Could it have happened? Yes, because let's face it, the science behind the tsunamis across the Pacific isn't that great. I can think of a couple of other science areas where the science isn't that great in predicting things either. Like, I don't know, predicting weather 3 days out. But we won't go there. But look, I take your point. It was a great 11 minutes and join the 9 p.m. edict.
Thank you, Duncan. If you'd like to leave a comment, just like he did, you don't have to be sober. Either Skype to Stilgherrian or phone Sydney, +61 2 8011 3733. Of course, you can comment on the website as well. We've had comments on the program, but you can read them for yourselves. You don't have to wait for me to read them for you. Christina Keneally is Premier of New South Wales on Wednesday night. Maybe it was another program, but I described her as, some sort of erotic attraction. Maybe others agree, because she's been getting good personal approval ratings in the polls, even though the New South Wales Labor Party is doing really badly. A new direction, she promises. Have a listen to her video.
I grew up in a family that valued hard work. My dad's American. Mum and my grandmother were both born here. My parents believed in taking responsibility for yourself, but always looking out for those who need a helping hand. My community and volunteering work taught me that all of us can make a real difference. I saw lives transformed. When I took the job of Premier, I knew it was a tough one, and that's fine by me. Because I also knew I'd do things differently, bringing fresh ideas and action to transport, health, education, and our environment. I've already introduced MyZone, making public transport fairer, easier, and cheaper. There's more coming, so check out my website. I love our state of New South Wales. It's where Ben and I have chosen to raise our children. As Premier, I'll put all my energy into the job, enlisting the help of the very best people in community and government to achieve real change.
Authorised by Matt Thistlethwaite, ALP Sydney.
Well, enlisting the very best people clearly doesn't include the very best audio crew, the bad microphone placement, the echoey sound, and that strange doubled-up audio at the end are in the original video. Anyway, KKK decided to weigh in on art this week. The Archibald Prize is a major prize for portraiture, which is run by the New South Wales Art Gallery. And one entry this year is apparently a portrait of Dennis Ferguson, a convicted pedophile, who has served his sentence and has since been released, although he's having trouble finding somewhere to live, because wherever he turns up, the pitchfork-wielding mob of self-appointed vigilantes turns up to drive him away. Now, I don't know how you solve this. As Dominic Knight, the writer for The Chaser, pointed out in a truly awesome blog post called The Premier, The Portrait and The Pedophile, quote, "We're a civilized society. We have neither the death penalty nor endless sentences. Sometimes, like Ferguson, pedophiles get released, and then we have to work out what to do with them. And trying to kill them or threatening to assault them, as has happened with Ferguson, reduces the perpetrator to the same moral level as the pedophile. There are a few clearer examples," says Dom Knight, "of two wrongs not making a right." Christina Keneally has weighed in on the existence of this painting, saying it goes too far. How exactly? Asks Dom Knight. Has she any more detailed analysis than the usual metaphor of crossing some arbitrary line? I don't think she has. And therefore, I believe it is time for an edict. This is edict number 4. If you are a politician, and if you are asked for your opinion of an artwork, and if you have not seen that artwork, then your comment will be, quote, "I'm afraid I have not seen the work in question, so I have no comment at this time." If you have seen the artwork, and if it is in any way controversial, then your comment will be, quote, I don't think my personal opinion is relevant. Art is always a matter of personal taste. I understand this work is controversial, but I also understand that it is the role of art to challenge us, to force us to question our assumptions about ourselves and about our society. People shouldn't have some knee-jerk reaction to this artwork just because it's controversial. They should take the time to see it for themselves and discuss it with their friends. And always remember, the right to free expression is fundamental to a civilized society. Did you hear that, Christina? Will you please take that on board? That's all for the edict tonight. I'll be back on our usual schedule next week, such that it is of Monday and Wednesday nights, so the next episode will be on Monday, the 8th of March, at or before 9 p.m., because this is the 9 p.m. edict.